I want people, no matter who they are, what maybe their perspective is on our politics or our world, our faith, our gender, all those sort of things that sometimes divide us. I want people to know that they are significant and that they're meant to be there.
Today's episode is sponsored by HEB Curbside and Delivery. When life throws you a loop, HEB Curbside and Delivery is here to help. We shop how you shop, so you get exactly what you want. Order today at HEB.com. HEB Curbside and Delivery, it's never been easier to shop HEB.
I'm so glad that you joined us today. This is a very, very special Our Voices Matter podcast. For those of you who are watching, you can see where we are. For those of you who are listening, let me set the scene for you. We are sitting at a neighbor's table in Richardson, Texas, just outside of Dallas. And I'm going to tell you all about what Neighbor's Table is as I interview our guest today, Sarah Harmeyer. Yes?
Yep.
Sarah Harmeyer is someone whose story was told on the Today Show by Harry Smith. And when I saw the story, I was so mesmerized and blown away by what she is doing. It resonated with me. It fits within the mission of Our Voices Matter. And so I reached out to Sarah, and here we are. Sarah, it is such a pleasure to finally meet you and to hear your story.
It's a treat to meet you, Linda. Growing up in Houston, I saw your face on TV almost every night. So it's very great to meet you.
It's just so wonderful to have a connection with you now. So for our audience, tell them what Neighbor's Table is.
Yeah, so Neighbor's Table started when I asked my dad to build a table just like this back in 2012. I realized early on that God made me a people gatherer, and I wanted to live into the way that God made me. And I asked my dad if he'd be willing to build me a table, and I started gathering intentionally around that table back in 2012. And about a year and a half in, we started building tables like this for other people. So we say Neighbor's Table is a love mission. We want to be really missional about the way we love people. And we happen to build the actual space that we gather around. So I deliver these tables all over the country and encourage people and kind of cheer them on to love the people just closest to them, to the left and the right of them. So.
That's kind of poetic, to the left and the right, because that's very symptomatic also of where we are politically. And we'll go there in a minute. But 2012, right, when you started? So it was a different time a little bit in terms of where we were at that point as a nation, in terms of the way we relate to each other, how we talk, et cetera. We weren't quite as divided, at least on the surface, where everything right now is just out there.
Yeah.
The divisions were probably there, but they were a little more underneath everything. What have you witnessed from the time that you started this in 2012 to today? What is the change then?
You know, I still see from the very beginning till this day that people just want to be invited. They want to be included. So the first thing is to make sure people have a seat at the table. I'm real big on people knowing that they're important, that they're significant. Before we sit down at my own table, I'll go around and introduce everyone by name, and then I'll tell them what I love about them. So I want people, no matter who they are, what maybe their perspective is on our politics or our world, our faith, our gender, all those sort of things that sometimes divide us. I want people to know that they are significant and that they're meant to be there. So creating that environment is the first thing. I think I've seen people not only want to feel included and to feel invited, but I also think they are eager to be heard and also to use their own voice. So when we can create a space like that at a table that's an ordinary picnic table that we happen to share a meal at, I think really magical things can happen. And I found that the table is a great equalizer. So even though if people come in a little more hot the last few years, their voice is important, but they can also, we can see an executive sit next to an eighth grader and they both feel valued. You can see my plumber next to my Pilates instructor, and they both feel like they've got a voice at the table. So I think exactly what you've been seeing in our communities, things are heightened, but I also know that we can also change that heightened conversation by just making people feel welcome, feeling included, and feeling valued at the table. So that's my goal, and I hope that the people that have our tables across the country are doing that as well, and I know they are.
So give me a sense of when you first started, what was the first table?
Yeah, so I live in a neighborhood called So Hip here in Dallas, which we are not hip at all.
So Hip,
yes.
I love it.
South of Highland Park. And I held a party that I called the So Hip Soiree. And I literally said, bring a beverage, bring a dish, and if you've never stepped outside of your home, would you consider coming this night and meeting people? I don't know any of my neighbors. And I was that honest, Linda. And I remember people kept coming. I invited 300 people, my 300 closest neighbors, to my backyard that night. And 91 people ended up showing up. And I remember one person after another walking down that driveway. And I said, I know people want to be invited. I know that's what people want to do. There was tons of people that had never met anyone. I only knew two neighbors at that point when I started. And it was my first sign of people do want to get together. They do want to feel connected. And I know when we start to know people, our communities get stronger. We know we have a little more personal connection with Jan across the street that I always see walking, or George down the street that's walking with his boys, you know, at night with the dog or whatever. But I think once we get a little more connected, things start to shift. And I've seen that in my own neighborhood, at my own relationships, and at the table has really helped with that.
Are there any conversations or any instances that stand out in your mind as like goosebump moments?
Where, many.
Oh, okay. Please share.
So many. I had a neighbor reach out that first Christmas, and Lee had been to the table a couple times that year. He was a neighbor. And he said in his email, he said, Sarah, my son and I's plans fell through for Christmas. And I know sometimes your table is a place that people that don't have a place can come. Are you having an orphan Christmas this year? And I said, well, now I am, when you put it that way. But I love that Lee said, I know that your place is a place where people that don't have a place can come. I've never said those words, but I just thought that was lovely that he thought, you know, I needed a place on Christmas. My son and I want to be with people. I'm going to reach out to my neighbor. And I asked him that day, so would it be okay if we opened it up to the neighborhood and saw if anyone else needed a place on Christmas? So I posted on our Nextdoor website or neighborhood app for neighbors, and I said, if anyone needs a place on Christmas, we're having lunch at 2. Let me know if you'd like to join us, and we'll have the food. Lee said he's bringing the smoked turkey. And we had 9 men show up that day. I'd never met a single one of them. And I said, if you're showing up on Christmas at a stranger's home, you needed a place. So I bear hugged all of them as they walked down the driveway and introduced them to my family and introduced myself. And we were sitting at that table that day just talking about Dallas, nothing in particular. And I've got these 5-foot-tall letters that spell love along my fence. It's just a reminder of what I want to do with my neighbors. And I saw this guy, Russ, his eyes started welling up with tears. And he says, he points up at those love letters. He goes, that's what it feels like here. It feels like love. And there's very few places, Linda, that feel like love in our world today. And I don't know what makes a table feel like love, but in an ordinary backyard with a chain link fence that's got holes in it and a cracked driveway, we made a space for people. And I know that's happening all across the country. There's been moments of between a funeral and a burial that I've served sandwiches to, just a group of people that needed a place to land. There's been a gentleman there that was in prison for 25 years and was wrongly accused for murder. And he was the first person in Texas to be exonerated without DNA evidence. He came to the table one night, and there was other people and philanthropists around the table that cared about those that are incarcerated in our prisons now. I can't remember his name right now. He smiled the entire time. I was like, he's got joy. Like, what is it that he's got that we're missing, where he could have easily been so angry at the state or angry at the world, and now he's helping, you know, other people. there's moments that I see across the country at other people's tables that they're gathering with refugees from Ethiopia and sharing an American meal at their own table. I think about how many people come into our country that don't have an American home experience. And I'm seeing people on both coasts doing that with people just like that, that look different from them, that eat different, that raise their families different. But at the core of all of us, we all need a place, and we all want to be seen, and we all want to be heard at the table. And a simple planks of red Western cedar is doing that for so many of us, which is just a home base to do that. So I could tell you story after story of people from coast to coast that are doing that alongside me. And I feel like we have a family. We call them our neighbor's table family that are doing this. So I've got the best seat in the house. Watching it all happen.
Well, you see me wiping away tears. I mean, just listening to you share these stories, and I can picture, you know, these people sitting around your table from all walks of life and all races and ethnicities and backgrounds and religions. And how big is this movement now, the Neighbors Tables movement, nationwide? How large is it?
Well, it's big in my heart, so yes. I don't know how people measure how big things are. But we've delivered to over 32 states now. And when I say we delivered, I literally have gotten in a box truck and delivered these tables to people. I like to sit down and have the first meal with people and really invest in people as much as I can when we deliver. When I delivered this table, we had that meal around here, and we got to know each other and really first be neighbors together. We've built just over 240 tables, and my dad is the one that's building these tables out of our family barn in Luling, Texas. And when you think about how many hours it takes to build one table and two benches, and then multiply that by all the people in our neighbor's table family, there's a lot of hours of love that go into that. But every mile, every hour is worth what we're seeing happen at these tables. And like I said, it's big in my heart. It's, I think, catching on to other people and what they're finding in their own hearts. It's fun to see what people step forward and want to be a part of Neighbor's Table. And I see people that are made like a people gatherer. They know how to do this. I see other people. I've driven down a long dirt road in Indiana that she said, I don't know how to invite my neighbors, but I thought if I had one of your tables, it'd be a good start. And I delivered a table to an old family barn on their property, and she said, how do I invite now? And sure enough, about a month later, she sent me a picture of her invite. She had scribbled on a piece of paper, and she ran that down to each of her neighbors in her truck and invited those people, and she said, I know I can do it now. So it's beautiful. I'm learning so much from all these other people that have tables, and learning how to actually connect with people and actually love people around them by what, you know, situations are in their neighborhoods and their properties. So
I'm wondering if there are ever times when you've noticed conflict or contention of some kind at a table.
Yeah.
And if so, describe that and then how it was resolved.
Yeah. You know, this is bizarre, but I have not experienced a whole lot of conflict at the table.
Really?
And people ask me that, and I know there's conflict in the world, but I wonder if there's a way that we host and we invite people that people feel respected and heard, so that there isn't that automatic conflict. I know there's got to have been some. I know people have come to the table that have recently got news from a divorce and they wanted to be at the table. I know that there's been some hard things in people's lives that have come. But as far as conversations that got heated, I actually haven't experienced a lot of that. But I know that happens.
But you know, so I think it's interesting that you started answering that question by saying, I think it might have to do with the way that they're invited, because it presumes respect.
Yeah.
And really an invitation that says you are wanted, you are welcome here for who you are, pure and simple, and no questions asked.
That is exactly how I start things. Even after that introduction, I'll go around and I'll tell people everybody's names and what I love about them. Even if I just met them, I'll say, this is George. I just met him as he walked down my driveway. I can tell he's an incredible dad by the way he talked about his boys' soccer games this morning. He's also an attorney, so he's down at this end of the table if you have any questions. I'll do something so quick about people. And then before we sit down, I'll say, this is what I hope we would experience together, which is an interesting thing to share with people before they sit down at the table. But I said, I hope we would do more listening than talking tonight. And you can see people going, what does she mean by that? Mm-hmm. And that really welcomes people and to listen to each other and really hear each other out. If you have a different life experience or a different way of growing up or a different worldview, listen to them. I say we're all a part of this experience tonight. So if you see water glasses low, jump up and fill them up. I know I'm hosting, but like, let's all serve each other tonight. I'll say we eat family style here. So hold the platter and the awkward tongs for each other. Let's do this together. So there might be a way that we're setting up that table and that space for people to feel safe. And that might make a difference, but I know we have differences, but I do, like you just said, I think creating a space of respect and creating a space where people can be themselves mm-hmm. is really important mm-hmm. for me. I always pray before we sit down, and I always ask people, would it be okay if I pray? I don't even demand it. I just ask as a question, because for me, as a Christian, I want to invite God into our space, and I want that to be, you know, part of what we do. So not everyone probably agrees with that, but they don't seem to mind when I set it up as like, this is something I'd like to do. Would that be okay with you? So I don't know.
Does politics ever come up?
Sure. Yeah.
What are those conversations like?
You know, I think it is something we might have even had a gathering the night after this last presidential election. I think I did that on purpose. Mm. Just because there's been so much tension. And I wanted us to bring that back to, you know, the same thing. Like, we do have differences. I don't remember exactly what our conversation was that mm-hmm. night, but mm-hmm. I wanted us to feel that unity, even though it was in a moment that felt really, you know, separated.
Yeah.
I didn't vote for who won that election, but I knew there was going to have to be something that I did to participate to feel like I'm still connected with people.
And by that time, you had already been going for 4 years.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And so I guess I asked this earlier and I maybe didn't ask it in quite the same way, but I guess, so the conversations pre-2016 versus the conversations post-2016 are, how would you characterize them?
Yeah, I don't know if I've seen a ton of difference, but I think, again,
how you're inviting people.
It's, yeah, mm-hmm. it's not, I don't know if it's the topic that we see a lot spoken at the table. And maybe everyone talks about it outside and social media, mm-hmm. that this is a brief moment that we're not talking about it. Mm. A lot of times I'll say, we've all had our own days. Like, whatever today brought you up until this point, why don't you leave it in the street? Leave it in the car. And like, let's create a new moment here today.
Exactly.
So yeah, I don't know if they've shifted a whole lot, but I know they have.
Yeah,
because I see that in my Facebook feed. I see that everywhere else I see in the news. But
you've created this space where people feel safe and they feel love.
I hope so.
And they
yeah.
feel invited. Mm-hmm. So tell me a little bit of your backstory. Where did this love, this empathy, this understanding, this big heart of yours, where did this come from? What's your backstory?
You know, I get asked that sometimes when people say, did your mom have people over a lot? And I grew up in a home where we had a white couch that no one could sit on. You know, my mom, when kids would come over, she'd make cheesecake bites. I'm like, Mom, we just want Doritos. Like, I don't even know if I picked that up from my own mom, like seeing that modeled.
Yeah.
I do that differently than my mom did.
Right.
I lost my mom in high school, though, to a quick battle with cancer. And I think I learned at an early age that life is short and people matter and relationships matter. I think I learned that early on. I do think, like I said, God made me a people gatherer. I love people. I love connecting with them. I love relationships. That's always been important in my work. So I was a teacher right out of grad school and then worked on staff at a church, then worked in fundraising for a children's hospital. And I've always been into people's stories, but I've also loved just people in general, even if they're different from me. I think there's been a lot of curiosity in my life about things and about people. So the curiosity of the way I like to do relationships. If my guy that's sacking my groceries says, "Oh, it looks like you're having a party. You got so much food." And I was like, "Yeah, you want to come?" Like, I'm just like that.
Did he come?
Yeah. My grocery sacker's come. I've had one twice come. I'm like, "Yeah, dinner's at 6:30. Here's my address. Come on." So I think how I got to the place of actually asking Dad to build me this table was I was in a place in my young professional career that my identity was really wrapped up in the things I did.
What was your career at that point?
I was working at St. Jude Children's Research Hospital doing events and galas. So I was doing about 11 galas a year amongst committees and other staff and that sort of thing.
That's crazy.
And I worked all the time. Being single, I just sunk my teeth into work. And a good friend and pastor of mine said, "Sarah, I want to help you reshift your identity away just from your work, but just who you are and how you've already been made and how you can just rest in who you are." And he goes, "You're a people gatherer." And he goes, "I want you to think about how you might gather people." And I had no clue what that even looked like. He didn't either, but he just kind of tossed it up there to me. And I spent a few months thinking about what that might look like. And I was working. I didn't have kids or a dog to even get me outside my house. I'd pull into my driveway and go back out to work. So I started thinking back to the very best moments of my life, and they've been around the table. In grad school, I had a cafe out of my house super illegally. I literally played restaurant. I had a roommate that said, "Sarah, I see how much you love having people over. Why don't you open a cafe?" And this was up in Arkansas, which doesn't have anything to do if it was legal or not. But I just started serving lunch 3 days a week, and all my grad classes were at night. And I would serve a soup, salad, sandwich, and dessert. And I'd put a mason jar at the table at the end of the meal and say, "Pay me whatever you want." This was just fun. It was like having friends over. Mm-hmm. And I knew there was something special about that year that just tied into like how I really was made. So when I started thinking about how I might gather people, I kept coming back to the table and how I like sharing that. And being a party girl doesn't sound very important, but what I've seen over the years, it is kind of important. It is a way for us to connect with each other. And it's been so much joy ever since. So I've had about 3,500 people around my table now in all these years. And every kind of person you can imagine has sat around that table. And 9 out of 10 times when people say, "Sarah, that was the best dinner party ever." And I said, "Well, why was it so great for you?" And they said, "The people." And I know in that instant, those people were not all like that person that's saying that. But I think we actually enjoy being around people in a safe space that are different from each other. We have so much to learn from each other. And I've been the first person that's learned a ton. I get to be the keeper of all those stories, being the host.
What have you learned?
So much. I've learned to not be quick to judge. I've learned there's so many stories that direct the way we live our lives. There's hurt in the world that has shifted people's lives. People genuinely love to celebrate. I'll say, if you want to give a toast at this table, give a toast. We'll have 12 toasts at a meal because people like to celebrate. I've been encouraged in the work that I'm doing. I've seen others encourage people in the work that they're doing in a field so different from theirs. I've seen people be past hope as if it's actually a dish that they're passing that's lost a job. That says, "I think you're going to find something that's just going to be perfect for you." Months later, they're still in touch and they get to celebrate when that new job happens. I've seen babies and weddings. We've had rehearsal dinners around the table. There's been life celebrated. And I think when life is shared, we can all look at each other and celebrate, even if there's just a small glimmer of hope around that table. I think we've been able to find that together.
You strike me as someone who's the perfect example of what it means to find your passion and let it lead you toward your calling. Mm. And that's what you're doing. You are living your passion, and you are making such an incredible difference in our world. Mm. Do you feel that?
I feel joy. There is something that feels like all boosters are firing when I'm getting to do my thing. And I think about that, like my friend Eric told me, like, he was like, your identity, it's so wrapped up in what you do. Now my identity is so wrapped up in who I am and just being me. So when I get to put a plate of food in front of people, I'm just being Sarah. I'm just getting to be who God made me to be. And there's a lot of joy that comes with that. There feels like there's wind at my back instead of fighting against, like, trying to get somewhere. And, you know, I'm doing Neighbor's Table full time now. I stepped away from my full time job 2 years ago, a job that I loved, because I felt like this story was being written just for me. And probably anyone could fill my job and my other role, but this story was being written for me. So I just think about, like, if we all got to do the thing that we were made to do, and we just ran hard after it, how much joy we would all experience, and how I think that kind of leaks out to the people around us. So my dad gets the biggest kick out of seeing me gather. He got to build the first table and see his daughter do her thing. And then he gets to build these other tables, and he's the first person that I get to text and say, okay, this is where your table's landed. This is who you got to help, and get to tell him his stories.
And I bet it's made your relationship that much deeper and that much richer.
It's been a sweet thing to do together, for sure.
So where do you want Neighbor's Table to go? Do you think about that, or do you just keep doing your thing day to day?
I really keep doing my thing. I'm a dreamer in a lot of sense, that I dream about more people living and loving more intentionally in their community. So my short-term dream would be to see these tables in all 50 states. I would love to look at a map and think about people doing that intentionally. We're at 32, so we're getting there. But other than that, it's just keeping on doing the thing that I'm made to do and cheering the other people along that are made to do this as well. I'm not begging anyone to get tables. It's literally them saying, yeah, I find myself in this story. I want to be a part of that story too. And it's so cool to be a part of.
How are people finding you?
You know, I think social media. I do some public speaking so people will hear my full story and see themselves. But with these days, with social media and a couple good media pickups, the word gets out. So I am so surprised anyone outside my own neighborhood knows about this. And what's even better, Linda, is people in my own neighborhood don't even know about Neighbor's Table. They just think I'm the party girl. They just know I've got
Sarah,
a table.
Sarah the party girl, right?
And for the Baptist in me, it loves being the party girl.
Mm-hmm. So when you got the call from Harry Smith at the Today Show, what was that like?
You know, it was the producer that actually called me. And I was so floored, like, that they were, it was so out of the blue. And she literally said, what's your elevator pitch? And I'm like, oh my gosh, people really ask this question. And I was like, well, this is what we're doing. And I just pictured her in, like, a busy New York cab. It sounded like a lot of things were going on. And she was like, I like this. I think I'm going to put Harry Smith on this. And in the moment, I was so nervous. I thought she said Harry Styles. And I was like, Harry Styles, is he with the Today Show now? So we got that real clear after that. I was like, oh my gosh, Harry Smith is iconic. He is a unicorn among journalists. So he was such a treat to meet. And the producer came out and shot in 4 different locations. And the time we had with Harry was actually around the table and the meal. And he told me that night, he said, Sarah, I could be sitting in the East Wing of the White House preparing to interview our leader. And he said, I would rather be at a table like this with people like this. And he wasn't making a political statement, but he is about real life. And I think we probably are. We all seem starstruck by these big people in our lives, but we really desire to sit at a table, feel comfortable, to be seen, and that's what we're about. And Harry got to experience that. It was a real, real treat.
So. Well, thank you, Harry, for introducing us.
Yes.
Those of us who watch the Today Show, because otherwise I would not have found Sarah as quickly, I guess, as I did. And I just feel so hopeful when I talk to you and when I hear your stories, and I feel blessed. I think what you're doing is incredible, and at the same time so simple.
Yeah.
And most definitely impactful. You are leaving a mark. And if there were one thing that you would like to leave our audience with, for those who might not feel so hopeful or whatever, I mean, just something to help us get through these contentious times, what would that something be?
Yeah, I think looking for the things that give us hope is important right now. I asked that question at the last gathering around my table. I said, what's giving you hope these days? If you need a reminder of that, ask the people around you. Because sometimes we have to borrow each other's hope, don't we? Mm-hmm. I think also a reminder that it's not all important. Somewhere we have like emphasized everything that comes out on Twitter, everything that comes out through our news feed, we feel the weight of that, and it doesn't always all matter. And to find a perspective of the things that do matter, and to spend our time in that and investing or listening or sharing those things, we have to be sharers of the hope.
Yeah.
And to remind ourselves of that, we all need reminders. So let's do it together and remind each other.
My reminder has been this weekend. So I'm here visiting my daughter.
Yeah.
And yesterday we spent the day walking through the farmer's market with my new grand puppy, Layla. She's so adorable. And I just had the biggest smile on my face the entire day. And at some point, I remember thinking to myself, I can't remember the last time I spent a day where I was smiling and bursting with love, so much so that I was fighting back tears. Seriously. I had not felt that for such a long time. It was a glorious, beautiful day. People were out and about, walking and talking. We had wonderful conversations with people who came up and wanted to play with the puppy, and we would talk, and I mean, every color, you know, just people being people and enjoying the day and each other and this beautiful life that we are all blessed to have. And I just felt like the weight of everything that I know I carry, you know, and I'm sure so many of us do, you know, we all carry something. And I just felt it lifting. I felt it lifting, and I felt so thankful for those just moments, those little moments, because that's what really matters.
Yeah, we have to do more of that to remind ourselves, don't we?
Yeah,
we do. Great.
Well, you do, and thank you so much, and I hope you know that we're connected now, and you're never getting rid of me.
Totally. Whatever I can do to serve you, host
so,
you, or whatever.
I mean, I feel our missions are so aligned, and I want to do everything I can to help you and promote what you're doing, because we need more of this in our world. So thank you for bringing it to us.
Yeah, we're both kind of keeper of the stories, aren't we?
Yes.
You
yes.
get to share them. So
yes.
That's wonderful.
So it's been a pleasure. And thank you so much for taking the time. And thanks to our audience for listening and watching and for giving Sarah permission to speak and for having the courage to listen. We'll see you again next time.